integral is roughly that you essentially, so you add the fermions to the path integral that precisely cancel the gauge degrees of freedom. To be less anti, there is just an integral over configurations of the fields, modulo gauge transformations. Now, during the lecture, I was drawing pictures with some manifold which roughly indicates the space of all fields with an action of a gauge group which gives you some orbit. So this is the point, these are all the points that can be obtained by acting on that point with a group. And I explained that roughly when you gauge fix, what you want is to find a gauge fix condition which selects one point in each orbit of the gauge group. And you want to integrate over this section with an appropriate measure. Unfortunately, some of the explanations I was giving about the volume of the gauge group and how that gives you a Jacobian in the integral were very confusing. And I believe they were presenting things almost the opposite way that they should be presented. So I'm going to restart from here, okay? We just keep in mind the bosonic and fermionic integrals with a BRC symmetry. And we are given the problem of understanding gauge fixing. Now, if the group is compact, gauge fixing is not really necessary. Meaning, if my group has a nice finite volume, I could just say that I define to that in order to get rid of the overcounting by the action of the group, I can just divide by the volume of the group. So the definition of my gauge fixed path integral in that case could be just taken to be something like that without having to do anything fancy. And I could say that this is just by definition the integral over the quotient of my space of field by gauge transformations with some appropriate measure. Now, intuitively, when you do gauge fixing, you want to identify this quotient with this cut to the space, to the orbits of the gauge group. But the things I was explaining very poorly was the fact that somehow the measure that you use on this quotient might not be the same as the measure that we naively use for integrating along this submanifold. I was giving the example of the plane, of an integral over the plane. The integral of the plane is an integral in r, the theta, right? If I divide by 2 pi and I'm integrating something that depends only on the radius, I can just remove the theta. I could interpret this as integrating just on a ray from the origin to infinity, but I need to be careful that the measure I'm using is not the one I would usually use to integrate along the ray, because it remembers the size of the gauge orbits. Now, this definition clearly does not work if the group is not compact, is infinite, has an infinite volume or is infinite dimensional, just because I'm going to do something like infinity divided by infinity. Gauge fixing is a way to regularize that. So the way we regularize it, if you want, if you forget about the Gauss for a moment, it's just pretty much the observation that if I have some function on the group, a bunch of functions on the group, so or you know, the number of times, the number of. So this is just a multidimensional version of what we were showing last week, right? If I have an integral over the group, and some functions which are zero only at some point on the group, intuitively, the delta function will localize this integral at that point. Integrating over delta function gives you 1/ the absolute value of the determinant of the first partial derivatives of your arguments of the delta function divided by your coordinates. And if I multiply by the determinant, I'm going to get something very simple, 1 plus 1 or minus 1. These are just the derivatives of the functions in the direction of. Now, this is true for something that is not a group, too, for any manifold. The fact that it is a group allows you to use this sort of nice Lie derivatives essentially it allows you to use around each point the infinitesimal motion in the various directions of your Lie algebra. As explained, we can rewrite this in a way that is a bit more similar to a path integral by introducing ghosts. I rewrite it as something like this. And this form has a, or the integral has a nice Fermionic symmetry. And the existence of this Fermionic symmetry essentially ensures that the precise choice of these gauge fixing conditions does not matter. We'll always get the same thing on the right hand side. Okay. Now, the way one usually presents the gauge fixing in that language is that you can just insert inside this integral one written in that form. Where your gauge fixing conditions are written now as a function on the group, which is just some function on the manifold acting on G of the point. Something like that. So this is a function of G acting on X, is in particular a function of G. So I can use it in here. And now the standard trick is to change coordinates from X to GX. The measure by assumption and the action are invariant under the action of the group. So changing variables from X to GX does not do anything. The only difference is now the G dependence has disappeared. Okay. And now it's the vector fields that gives the reduction of the group on the manifold. And now, so G, the G dependence has dropped out. So I can just do the integral over G, pull it out, it gives me vol G. I get rid of it. And this is the definition of the, there's an improved definition of the gauge fixed action. And while these definitions were sort of okay only for when the volume of the group was compact, this definition is okay in general. Okay, now there is no more overcounting to worry about. So this is the definition of the gauge fixed path integral. The fermionic symmetry is still there. The only difference is that because of the change of variables now, the BST symmetry acts as an infinitesimal gauge transformation on the manifold. Okay. And this BST symmetry is very useful because making sure every time you worry that some quantum effect might have spoiled your gauge fixing, you go and check if your BST symmetry is really nilpotent and if Q exactings are really decoupling. And as long as that's happening, this is okay. Okay, so I would like to apply this formalism to string theory. Now, I could just take and start and try to gauge fix different reasons, a one invariant, and put Gauss for everything. But it turns out to be a little bit of an overkill. We just need to gauge fix the diffeomorphism invariant, and the wild transformations will just drop out by themselves without having to work any harder. So that will allow us to introduce a little bit fewer ghosts than you might have naively thought. Now, what are the symmetries we need to gauge fix? As we said in the beginning, we need to study a path integral over the metric on the Riemann surface and some fields, which is invariant under diffeomorphisms, okay, which are transformations of the metric. Look like that. So this is a vector field. Diffeomorphisms are generated by vector fields infinitesimally. And so that means that the C ghosts that you need to introduce must also be vector fields. So they must behave like fermionic vector fields. So the parameters were some VA D over DA. Here we lower the index to Now, which sort of gauge fixing condition do we want to impose? So as I was mentioning last week, you can use the diffeomorphisms to make the locally the metric to be flat up to a wild transformation, which means you can make locally your metric look like e to the phi dz dz bar. Sorry. This cannot be done globally though. You'll find metrics which are which have this form in different patches and are related by complex gauge transformations. Such a family of metrics was called a complex structure. So to just stay generic for now, let me say that I have some family. Somebody has given me the space of complex structures, and for every complex structure has given me a representative metric. So has given me the Riemann surface equipped with a specific metric. So somebody has given me a family of reference metrics, functions of this space of complex structures. So my gauge fishing condition is just going to be that my metric is equal to this up to a wild transformation. So I can take my gauge fixing functions conditions to be something like delta of HAB minus. But how do we express the fact that this should be the same as this up to wild rescaling? Essentially, it means that we want HAB to be proportional to H hat AB. Okay. There is a very simple way to impose that. Let me take my B's to be tensor with two indices and such that AB, BAB equal to zero. So they are traceless. Well, then my gauge fixing condition is essentially equivalent to the statement that, that's what I wanted to write. Then my gauge fixing condition is the same as requiring HAB, BAB to be zero. So this is my definition, and this is my gauge fixing condition. So you see, because these are orthogonal to the reference metric, the fact that this is zero implies that H is parallel to the reference metric. So it's proportional to the reference metric. So these are going to be my B, capital B fields. And so my ghosts, my B ghosts, will have to satisfy a similar relation. Okay. Not just by, so these are my functions. This is my BIFI, right? So my gauge fixing action is going to look like I HAB BAB plus I. Now we need to put here the variation of this along the C's, which is just this transformation with vector fields replaced by C. So something like that. Okay, this is symmetric. So this is the action I need for the ghosts. Now, of course, when we at this point, we can just integrate away capital B and literally replace HAB with a wild factor times H hat times the reference metric. But the point that I want to stress out, and it's a cute little calculation, is that this ghost action is also wide invariant. So, so that means that if I replace in the action HAB to be e to the phi H hat AB of the M, then e to the phi will just drop out. So e to the phi will drop out from the original action because the original action was one invariant. It drops out from the ghost action. It just drops out for everything. As long as it drops out from the measure, I can just take it out from the path integral and throw it away. So we can just work with the gauge fixed action for the scalar fields that describe the motion in space-time and for these ghosts. Now, after if you integrate away B, you might worry about BRC symmetry. Now, if you think about it, because there is this ghost action in the path integral, an insertion of capital B is more or less the same as the derivative respect to the metric. So if I've inserted somewhere in some operator a B, I can integrate by parts with respect to the metric. So essentially, that shows that when we get rid of B, essentially B will be replaced by a small variation of everything with respect to a change in the metric. But that's the stress tensor. So here B will drop out, but here we'll find the stress tensor on the right hand side. Okay. So at this point, let me just gauge fix everything locally and take the metric to be just the Z to Z bar. Okay. Then, what are the fields we have in our path integral? There are the scalar fields. Discussed last week, and there are the ghosts. Once you go in complex coordinates, you have C and CZ and CZ bar, and it's useful to actually lower let me see. Which we'll just call C and C bar. And then we have BZZ and BZ bar, Z bar, because B was traceless, which means it has no Z bar component. And these ones we'll just call B and B bar. And the ghost action is simply B, Z bar C plus B bar, Z C bar. Okay. So this is our final result of gauge fix, or the gauge fix string action. From now on, we'll always work with this. We'll never mention again, I hope, almost never mention again, wild transformations or matrix. We'll work with this, modulo complex gauge transformations, holomorphic coordinate transformations. So, diffeomorphism invariance and wild symmetry got simplified down dramatically to just complexified coordinate transformations. And if you look at this action, it's pretty clear that if you replace Z with some holomorphic function of Z and Z bar with some monomorphic function of Z bar, the transformations will cancel the measure. Here is also true, as long as you remember that these guys transform with the Jacobian, just because they have indices implicitly. There is a stress tensor which has contributions on the matter, which we discussed last week. Up to a careful definition of what this product of scalar fields means. And there is similarly a stress tensor for the ghosts, which you had to compute by going back to the action for the ghosts. I should put the square root of H. And it looks like C D B plus 2 the C B. Very roughly, these 2 and 1 are closely related to the fact that there are 2 indices here and 1 index here up. Sometimes you do conformed field theory, you can find different ghost systems which have different number of indices up and down. They find similar stress tensors, but the numbers here are slightly different. They always add up to 1. The difference is always 1. But the sum can be different. OK. There is one final quantity that I should describe. So if you look at the ghost at this action, there is an obvious symmetry that rotates C one way and B in the opposite way, or here too. It is called the ghost number current. and can be written just like that as an operator. Again, you can get it from this action by doing an infinitesimal rotation of B and C in opposite ways with a position-dependent parameter. And you derive the current, and you get something like that. Now, of course, so this stress tensor will have some somewhat anomalous transformation. Anomalous behavior under coordinate transformations due to the subtraction. As you remember, it was defined as a limit. Of an expression like this, where I subtracted the divergence. And if you do a coordinate transformation, the stress tensor almost transforms like something with 2 indices, but there is a little bit extra depends on the quantum, on the regularization of the operator. And this was the central charge that while that conformal anomaly, while anomaly. The Gauss had a similar problem in defining the stress tensor. You also had to subtract something. I think I did it properly. And when you look how this transforms under coordinate transformations, it gets an anomaly, which is minus 26. So if each individual scalar field had an anomaly, a problem, which gives you one, this will give you minus 26. And so you see, I mean, it's a straightforward calculation. We can do it in an exercise, I think. And so you see that the total stress tensor will behave well if you have exactly 26 dimensions. So that's when you trace over the number of dimensions, you get a plus 26 here, minus 26 here, and everything works okay. Now, one way to understand that is that B definitely transforms as a tensor with two indices without any funny transformations, any funny shifts, but we want QB to be T. And we want conformal transformations to still be a coordinate transformations to be a symmetry, not to interfere with BRST symmetry. So it better be that T transforms just in the same way as B, the total T. So that's one way to see that you need anomaly cancellation. Another way to see it is to just write down the full BRST charge, something that I will probably try to avoid because it's a little bit cumbersome. But check by hand that it squares to zero only if you have 26 dimensions, if you have 26 scalar fields here. Now, this current also has an anomaly when you try to define it properly, because it also has a divergence. I'm gonna compute this divergence as momentarily, okay? I just wanted to write down the expressions first. I think it's something like that. Yes. Because of that, again, when you do a conformal coordinate transformation, your current doesn't quite transform as an object with one index. Let me call it the Gauss number current. But it has an extra shift. So it also has this Gauss number current has an anomaly. Is not precisely conserved. Uh, which means essentially, so you see, if the Gauss number current was conserved, and if it was a symmetry of your path integral, it would mean that you always need to have as many B's as C's in your path integral. Otherwise, when you do the path integral, you'll get zero, because there will be some B directions or some C directions which cannot be cancelled against the action. On the other hand, if you have an anomaly, it means that your path integral will be non-zero only when the number of C's minus number of B's equals that anomaly. Now, if you remember last week, I was explaining how, at the very end of the lecture, how to deal with situations where you have a family of gauge fixings. So here, for a general Riemann surface, we cannot, so there is a family of possible complex structures to which you gauge fix. So the full path integral is a path integral, it's a standard integral over these complex structures, and a path integral over the scalar fields and the Gauss. But in order to make this expression BRST invariant, we needed to introduce some partners for my bosonic directions. And some piece in the action that roughly look like e to the sigma b df over dm. Okay. And then if you integrate away the sigmas, you're left with integral in dm of a bunch of b insertions, one for every sigma. So the gauge fixing really tells you that when you have a modulized space of complex structures, you should have more B's inserted than C's. And just turns out that there is a beautiful index theorem that tells you that the anomaly in the Gauss number is exactly equal to the number of, to the dimension of the space of complex structures on your Riemann surface. So things are consistent. Okay, so let's start playing with these ghosts, the same games as we played with the scalar fields. Let's quantize them on a cylinder and start to preparing the ground to study the full spectrum of the strings.
If the ghost number is zero, then the path integral vanishes. Sorry, the anomaly in the ghost current is zero.
So the anomaly essentially, if you integrate, so what does anomaly mean? Anomaly means that if you do a divergence of your current, you get something. This is not zero. Now it turns out that in case, what you get is some multiple of the curvature of your Riemann surface. So if you want to know the total mismatch in the Gauss number current, you integrate this on the whole Riemann surface. Here is something like a tree. Plus minus, don't remember. And this gives you the integral of the curvature of the whole surface, which is 1 minus the genus. So you see the amount, so your path integral makes sense only if you have precisely these many C's more than B's. And this matches what's going on here. We might come back to that. For now, let's just quantize these ghosts on the cylinder. Sorry?
You're at 1 minus the genus?
I believe so. Like for a torus of 0.
It seems like for larger genus, it'll be negative.
Indeed. So in, for large, B has charge minus 1 and C has charge 1. So for large genus, you have more Bs than Cs.
Was your claim that this would match the dimension?
The dimension of the monolith space of a complex structure, the Riemann surface of genus G. Yes, so this tells you that for this is number of C's minus number of B's. On the other hand, now in genus zero, you need a bit more C's than B's. And we'll come back to that. Essentially, what's going on in that case is that even when you force the matter to be flat, there are some extra gauge transformations. So your gauge fixing was not complete. You need to finish it by hand. And this is done by inserting extra C's. Anyway, so quantization on the cylinder. I have my B and my C. And the equations of motions are very trivial. They tell me that C is holomorphic and B is holomorphic. So I'm going to expand them. Just in the same way as I expanded the free boson. If you remember, we had an expression like this. So these B and C modes play the same role as the oscillators for the free boson. Now they're ghosts, they're fermions, so they anti-commute instead of commuting. And the B's anti-commute the C's. So roughly, so starting from the ground state, you can build up a Hilbert space by acting with creation operators of B's and C's. And then the positive modes will act as destruction operators. So a positive B will kill a negative C, or positive C will kill the negative B. Right, so now, naively, I should just build everything from some ground state, as I was saying. Ground state, it is, say, killed by the positive modes of B and the zero mode, say. And the positive modes of C. Now the theory actually has two ground states. Well, four really, because let me just ignore the anti-holomorphic bar. So there is also B bar and C bar. I should talk about them. Let me ignore them for now. I'll come back to them. Let me focus on the holomorphic B and C. So at my ground state, and the simplest state I can create from it is C zero. Acting on the ground state is going to have the same energy because I'm acting with the zero mode. So these are the two ground states. And then I can start building up them. I can have B minus 1 on the ground state or C minus 1 on the ground state, or perhaps B minus 1, C zero on the ground state, or C minus 1, C zero on the ground state, and so on and so forth. Okay. And I can also define some cats by the same principle. Okay, so which are killed by be n. And with this definition, you have some relation like this. Okay, so in a sense, this guy is dual to this. And this guy is dual to this. Now, this is the first hint that the ghost number current is kind of funny. Now, this ground state is perfectly fine. I would actually use it pretty often, but for various reasons, it's often useful to refer to this state as the vacuum. Okay, even if it's not the lowest energy state. This state has much better properties than this for some purposes. Let me demonstrate one particular property. So let me go back to the stress tensor. For the matter fields, for the scalar field. So as you remember, this was some normal ordered sum of ak, a n minus k, minus some, it doesn't matter. Now, the vacuum for the free boson was annihilated by the positive modes. And then a zero on the vacuum was essentially P. And we saw that L zero on the vac on P gives P square over two P. On the other hand, L minus one on P gives something like P A minus one. So you see that if P is equal to zero, a minus one surprisingly annihilates it. So usually a minus one just creates something out of your ground state. But if you look at the zero momentum ground state, it's actually annihilated by a minus one. This actually follows from the Virasoro algebra. If you compute, if you're given some generic vector, act to L minus one on it and compute the norm, you can compute this with the Virasoro algebra. You get something like this. So if a state has zero energy, zero L zero, its norm must be zero. So it will typically be zero. Now, you cannot do this sort of reasoning for the ghosts because the ghosts are not unitary. It's perfectly possible to have null state in there. But still, because the BRST operator relates B and T, and it's useful to look for some state which has the same properties under B and under T. And that is true for this. So this vacuum is killed by L minus one n is also killed by b minus 1. Because b minus 1 squared is 0. So this vacuum has better properties than the BRST symmetry. It's a BRST invariant vacuum. Okay. Anyway, it will not matter much. It will matter when we discuss something called the space of the state operator map. But as long as we are concerned with just states or the string on a cylinder, this ground state is perfectly fine. Naturally, a lot of the interesting spectrum lives here. The spectrum of strings will be built out of this ground state acting with the free bosons. But this will have other uses. Now, the first thing we can do using these definitions is to compute a correlation function. So right, I could compute the correlation function between between my ground states. Or I could compute it between these other vacua, zero and its dual, which so we can rewrite this as just saying that the ground state is C1 acting on zero. and we can define it the same way a dual vacuum. And now the dual of these can also define something like this, which is zero, C1, C0, C minus 1. Which has the property that again, 0 tilde, 0 equals 1. Now, so I could compute this, or I can compute this. It's another correlation function, which is interesting. Now, for reasons which I cannot yet explain to you, this correlation function is slightly more interesting. For example, but either correlation function will work to show you what is the singularity that you find when you collide B and C. Okay? So they can be computed with the same ease. You just expand B and C in modes and use the definitions. Here you get, if I remember correctly, something like this. Well, here you get this. And morally speaking, this is better than this because B had two indices and C one index, and here we're finding true S prime minus S. So we'll make this observation a bit more sensible momentarily. But it was just to show you that when B and C collide, the singularity goes like 1 over s minus s prime, which is why I put this regularization here in the Gossamer current, and why I put this regularization here. See, when I do derivative respect of z prime, I get 1 over z minus z prime squared. When I do it respect of z, I get minus 1 over z minus z prime squared. There is a 2, so this term wins, and I cancel it out. So, using these definitions, you can expand both these or the current into B's and C modes. You can repeat the same calculations I did with a scalar field. And in particular, you can compute. So you can write down the moment, the modes of the stress tensor for the Gauss. You can compute the Virasoro algebra. You find everything as before. But the anomaly will be minus 26. Okay. So we computed the Virasoro algebra. Oh, sorry, why did I put anti-commutators? When you computed the Virasoro algebra for the boson, very patiently, we found 1/12. If you repeat the exercise for the Gauss, you find minus 26 over 12. So if you add up Ln for the matter fields plus Ln for the Gauss, you find something which was Virasoro algebra has no anomaly. And again, this is important to be able to have a situation where the BST charge relates the big host to the stress tensor. See, this in particular implies that Q commutes with the total L's. Cos square zero, square square is zero. And now if I just, I can compute the action of L's over B's, again from the definition, and there is something like N minus M B N plus M. So if I act with Q on both sides, here I get the commutator of L and L, here I get L, so it better be that I don't get anything here. So this is another way to see that the BRST symmetry is going to work well only if the total conformal anomaly cancels out. Now, I didn't write down for you Q. It can be done. It's a longish expression. Schematically, there is something called the BRST current, which schematically looks like C times the stress tensor for the matter fields plus 1/2 CCB, well, the B, plus something linear in C, plus something which you see in 1B and something with C. See. And Q is defined just as a zero mode of this ESD current. And the things that are essentially defined in such a way that this basic relation holds. So when you commute Q with B, it picks a C and gives me the stress tensor for the matter fields. And here it makes a bit of a mess, but at the end it spits out the stress tensor for the ghosts. I think I think this is more or less all that I wanted to say. Well, one more correlator. So out of these, I can in particular compute the one-point function of the for the current. Just by taking the limit as s goes to s prime of this minus this. And so I find, say, that this is true. Okay. So this is telling you essentially that this vacuum has ghost number minus 3 in the notation where C has ghost number 1. And so if you propagate that to the definitions, you see that, so this is ghost number minus 3 halves, this is ghost number minus 1 half, this is ghost number 1 half. So it's a pretty reasonable definition. The two ground states, opposite ghost number, and then everything else is built from them. Actually, this is something you might have encountered in other situations. So whenever you have a bunch of fermions zero mode, in this case it was B0 and C0, and you quantize them, you define some Fock space, some ground, you get a bunch of ground states which are related by the zero modes, and somehow this ground state transforms in the square root of the way the zero modes transform. So here at had zero modes, it charges plus 1 and minus 1. My ground states have charged plus 1 half and minus 1 half, so that the zero modes can send me from one to the other. You can have fun finding other examples. If you quantize a bunch of zero modes which carry a vector of SON, you'll find ground states which carry a spinor. SON, for example, which would be useful in a week from now. And okay, I think this exhausts the material. Okay, now we have all the tools that we need to do a proper derivation of the string spectrum and of those relations. Okay.